Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And thanking you once again for all the wonderful contributions and jumping in during our membership drive last week. We did great. This show did incredibly well. And I want to thank you all for showing your support to the Mark Steiner Show. Right now, we're about to have one of our conversations with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. So please call in now at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. And here we are with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. Mayor, welcome. Good to have you with us. Madam Mayor, you there?
Sorry, I had it on mute.
That's cool. How are you doing?
Every once in a while you realize you're 45. I'm talking to you and I had it on mute.
45. I wish I was 45 sometimes. But I'm,
good morning to you.
Good morning, good morning. So let me start with, before we go to the phones, interspersed questions. You chose not to be there, those three of the candidates for mayor to take your place were there for Governor Hogan's transportation. Now, outside of the angst and the real political issue of killing the red line, since we know that money's gone now, I mean, why didn't you go? And B, what would you have rather have him said beyond the red line than he did say?
It's more than what he's saying. It's what he's doing. And I have a very busy schedule. They let the Hogan administration let me know less than 48 hours, I think, prior to the announcement of the event. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't have the ability to change my schedule around, number one. Number two, you know, I'm sure many people have a lot freer schedules than I do, but I'm running one of the country's largest cities, and I take that very seriously. Third, you said, what did I want him to say? Again, it's not what he's saying, it's what he's doing and where the investments are going. There are hundreds of millions of dollars that should be coming into Baltimore City for transportation infrastructure investment that aren't. The fact that the plan is a very colorful plan to make the buses run on time is good, but that's sort of like the bottom, the baseline of what the state is required to do per state law. I did not think the transportation plan that was unveiled did anything close to revolutionize transportation across the critical east-west corridor, which was what the Red Line had the potential to do, as well as create economic development and jobs. Baltimore is woefully behind other cities in public transit, not just around the country but around the world. And we can't continue to play Baltimore small, and that's what this plan does.
So what would you do instead? Since the Red Line is gone, I mean, they killed it. So what, and whether people agreed or disagreed with different parts of Red Line, all that notwithstanding at the moment, then what would you have the state do as opposed to what they're doing?
I would look for significant infrastructure investment. And I asked the transportation secretary, show me a city where having an efficient bus system has transformed the economic development. There is none. We need to find a way. If he didn't like the red line, then you put another plan on the table. You don't scrap it and replace it with a bus system.
So let me go to the phone to intersperse my thoughts with our listeners here at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Lori on line one, who's been holding on the longest. Lori, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I was calling because on the mayor's last platform, when she said that raises were going to be given to the police department, the fire department, Department of Public Works, that everything was going to be the same for everyone, and it hasn't happened. And the main problem that I have is that most of the workers for DPW, transportation, we're below the poverty line. And I know the mayor may not be able to do anything at this time, but maybe future mayors, they could do something to help bring us above the poverty line. And to make a platform saying that everyone would get the same raised across the board, it just didn't happen.
I have to stop you there. I've never said that, and any mayor would say that is irresponsible. If you have the documentation of when I said that, I would like to see it, because I have never said that, nor would I ever say that. You can't promise to give every bargaining unit the same raise. Every bargaining union that you mentioned actually did get raises, significant ones in some cases, but I would never say that everyone would get the same because it's just irresponsible. And it has never been that case, ever, in Baltimore.
So before we go to our next caller, and Laurie, thanks for calling in. Let me get to some other issues here. But Donald, you're the next caller up at 410-319-8888.
I interrupt you, though, Mark. What I did say was that I would look for ways to increase incentives to add additional benefits to residents, and I did to Baltimore City employees, and I did make that across the board. While I started my home ownership incentive program with just first responders, listening to AFSCME Union and CUB, I immediately expanded that program to include all of Baltimore City's employees. So we did make that across the board. All of Baltimore City employees can get up to, I think it's $10,000 in home ownership incentives through our Baltimore Home Ownership Incentive Program.
410-319-8888. Come back and join us here, folks. Donald, you're the next caller up. But let me ask this question first. It was about our police and crime in the city. You saw the FBI putting out a statement. They thought police are intentionally backing off around the country. They made this statement in Chicago, and that's already come up in numerous ways in Baltimore, and that they say is in part perhaps responsible for the rise in crime and violence in our communities. But one of the things I'm just curious, what is our public safety plan? I say it in this way, because in the 23 years I've been on the air, we have had 10 police commissioners. We've had 8 since the year 2000. So you keep playing and switching commissioners. But none of us really can see where the plan is. What is the plan that's going to get the policing community to stop being at odds, especially in the black community, especially in the poor parts of the black community, that there is a huge amount of friction and distrust between police and the community. And other reports come out showing that police, no matter where they are, target black people more than white people, no matter what the situation is. And we see that over and over again. So we have this new commissioner. He may be a very fine man. I've yet to really sit down and talk to him. But what is the plan to make any difference in what we're doing now?
So I guess my question to you would, what would it need to be to look like a plan to you? Because we've talked about the plan and we've seen progress. I mean, we have an initiative. It's an all hands on deck approach to dealing with violence in our city. It's not. We know very clearly that we're not going to arrest our way out of the violent crime that we've seen in the city, and we've shown that. In 2014, we had the second lowest number of homicides that the city's had in over 40 years. At the same time, we reduced arrests. At the same time, because we're committed to improving relationships with the community, we had a reduction in the number of complaints of harassment, complaints of excessive force. We had a reduction in the lawsuits against the number of lawsuits against the city, and we saw a significant increase in the information that we had coming from the community to help us with investigations. I can say we took a major hit this year in the spring and in the summer, and we're working to recover, and those signs are very clear as well. August was better than July. September was better than August. October, we're hoping will be better than September, and we're going to continue to work on that progress. We have, a plan, all hands on deck, every part of the community. You see in my crime and grime walks, we're making sure that Department of Public Works, transportation, housing are all in these communities that are experiencing high crime to help us to make sure that that we're dealing with the grime in efforts to get rid of the crime. With our efforts to focus on the most violent offenders, we've doubled down on that with Safe Streets and Ceasefire. We have enhanced that work with BFED, the Baltimore Federal partnership that we have, as well as with the War Room. So we are focused on our most violent offenders, and there are multiple levels of that going on. We're focused on enhancing community police relationships, and we've seen the progress from that, and we are looking to have assistance from the Department of Justice in shaping those and those policies, and we'll continue to work to reduce crime in our city. You know, I'm not ceding the public safety fight because we had a rough year, because I know that we've made progress. The numbers bear that out, and I'm not going to stop fighting for a safer Baltimore and to do it in partnership with our communities.
So two quick questions. I'll go right back to the phones here with that. I mean, A, I'm still trying to understand what's the essential difference between the policies of former Commissioner Batts and this new Commissioner Davis. I don't really know or see them yet.
But who said that there was?
Well, then why would you have to switch in midstream?
We switched because, as I said when I made the announcement, the conversation and the attention was drawn on the individual and not the crime fight. I didn't say it was the conversation was about the change in policy. I never said that.
But, I mean, I think most people would agree that police don't actually stop crime more than they solve crimes, the reality of day-to-day work on the street and day-to-day in a community. So the question is, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think all those is real progress, but the question is, what is the real policy difference that, like, saying take police out of the cars, putting them on the street, investing more in community policing than we are investing in kind of these in what's happening with people just patrolling around, as opposed to having detectives and maybe more people solving crimes and knowing communities better, because the rate of solving crimes is really pretty abysmal for our city. Wouldn't you agree that?
Absolutely, I agree, and I also agree that Commissioner Davis has already talked at length about his efforts to enhance the training for officers, particularly those officers who we depend on to walk the streets on patrol. What he found in his research is that there are very little best practices on how to teach an officer how to patrol the streets. We send them out there. They have an area that they're supposed to patrol, and there's little else that goes on. Foot patrol is much more of an art than a science, and he's the police commissioner is working hard to give the trainees and the officers that are already on the street the equipment that they need, the tools that they need to be able to do the job. He's working on developing a program that teaches the cadets about the history of Baltimore, the history of policing in Baltimore. He's working on with officers who have years and years of experience with foot patrol and developing relationships with the community so they can be a mentor and a guide to officers that are just coming on the street. You understand that we're dealing with young people that are in their 20s. Their main form of communication is not face-to-face communication. It's text. It's Snapchat. It's Instagram. We have to teach them the social skills that they need to be able to do what we need them to do. And the commissioner is working very hard to do that.
In all fairness, let me go to the phones here again before we run out of time with you, Mayor. 410-319-8888. Donald, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
I just wanted to ask the mayor, about these here empty houses around here, and if I have a crew of people that's willing to fix the houses up with me for senior citizens, disabled, people like to say, why isn't I can't get a finance from them to fix it up and let the city later on start picking up the money, to get your finances back?
So first, thank you very much for the call, and thank you for your interest in helping us with our vacant vacant housing issue problem in Baltimore. We know anyone who's lived in Baltimore, who grew up in Baltimore, understands that the problem of vacant, blighted, and abandoned buildings has grown over decades, over generations. And one of the things that I'm most proud about my administration is, as evidence in the Able Foundation report that was recently released, they said that vacant-to-value is the most comprehensive blight elimination plan that the city has seen in decades. And I'm very pleased about that, because I made it, I was very clear that this is something that I wanted to see improved under my watch, and we're making a difference. And I would encourage Donald to come to the Vacants to Value fifth year anniversary summit, where we're going to have people from housing, housing experts, financing, you know, people that finance development and community developers, all there at the convention center to talk about how we can take Vacants to Value to the next level to improve what we've been able to do and continue to make progress across our city. And that's November 18th and 19th at the convention center.
Oh, good. We'll make an announcement about that on our program as well. As soon as we get the, yeah, that, we'll definitely do that. So let me pick up on what he was saying before we get to another caller here. You were at the Parkway Theater opening celebration the other night, and I wish I could have been there, but I couldn't have been there. Because I think they do great work.
There, because that's the whole Station North community is an example of the transformative power of Vacants to Value. You can draw a circle around Station North and look at the Vacants to Value that developments that have happened in that community that have transformed it. So, and I was there because the city was a significant. I believe in the power of art to transform communities, as evidenced by the fact that we invested over $1 million in that Parkway theater plan. The building was appraised at more than $1.2 million, and because I believe that it's a transformational project, we sold it for $1 as a sign of the level of commitment and investment that I have in transforming our community through art.
So, and I think transforming the community is incredibly important. But the question I have about that is, I'm sorry I couldn't have been there Friday night. I wanted to be there. But how does all this development between Hopkins and MICA and University of Baltimore, that whole center part of our city that's kind of growing and building up? There are a couple of questions. Let me just start with this one because it's with the time limitations we have with you this morning. How does that affect the most disenfranchised in the city? And I ask that question because, the people at the margins, which in some people's mind may be almost half the people of the city. You know, when we have 74,000 people applying for vouchers, we have 99,000 families desperate to kind of find housing and not worried what they're going to pay first. I mean, how – and we're seeing people kind of –
the thing, Mark. We have this debate all the time. I talk about a positive program, and you bring up the fact that it's not helping everything.
Excuse me, Mayor, but my job is to kind of probe what
– You have to deal in reality.
My reality is that there are 100,000 families in the city that live in poverty. That's the reality.
But you're talking about – Vacants to Value. You're talking about Station North as the answer to all of this.
No, I'm not. I'm asking what...
It's not. Vacants to Value is not solving that issue. What is solving what is working to solve the issue is things like what we did today, which is promoting job growth in Baltimore City and making sure that people who are doing business with city dollars are investing more in growing jobs so we can put more people to work in Baltimore City. What is working is the affordable housing that we're committed to doing, to creating more of in Baltimore so more people in Baltimore have a chance to sustain themselves in their family. Just talking about Station North doesn't address those issues, but that doesn't mean the work isn't being done.
And I'm not opposed to Station North. I love watching neighborhoods come back. I'm absolutely all for neighborhoods, all of the city coming back like that. I think it's incredibly important.
Bring it up and then say, but what are you doing for people in the margins?
Suggest
that Station North is supposed to do that.
No, I'm suggesting that we don't have an overall policy in this city that when we do develop addresses the issue of the mass poverty, which also fuels the crime the police have to deal with all the time. And that's the disconnect I'm talking about.
Well, the disconnect is that Station North was a community that was on the margins, and it's coming back. And I'm going to continue to fight like hell every single day to bring communities back that are on the margins. Station North is one of those communities, Barkley, Greenmount West, communities that are seeing investment for the first time in decades. And that's how we're going to change the conditions for people in the city. And the work that we're doing to bring more jobs in the city is going to enable people who are living on the margins to be able to make a way for themselves and their families.
Let me go back to the phone, since I promise our listeners back and forth here. I don't want to dominate the entire conversation. 410-319-8888 as we talk to Mayor Stephen Rawlings-Blake. Owen, on line 3. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Hi, Mayor.
Good morning, Owen.
I just wanted to go back to the transportation issue. I just read an article in the Baltimore Brew about the public bike share program, and I'm excited that that's coming back into the public conversation, but I wanted to kind of raised the cautionary flag about the company that submitted the lowest bid, Motivate. They violated the National Labor Relations Act in their D.C. operations. I have a friend who works for them, and they tell me that that's not a good employer. And so I'm aware that the price tag is only 30% of the selection process. And I kind of wanted to throw out a completely alternative option, and that's that instead of going with the out-of-town corporate entity to supply our bike share program, you know, we set up bike mechanic and bike entrepreneurship magnet programs at an East Side and West Side school, and then allow the graduates of those programs to start their own cooperatively run bike mechanic shops and bike share programs, kind of under the guidance of Baltimore Bicycle Works, and that would address a lot more issues than just transportation. It would address youth unemployment as well as minority-owned businesses, and would keep the resources here in Baltimore rather than shipping them off to out-of-town Brooklyn-based corporation.
Thank you, Owen.
So, Owen, if you could make sure that the producer has your contact information, I'd love to follow up with you about that initiative. It sounds interesting.
Perfect. Owen, don't hang up. One of the producers will pick up and get you in touch with the mayor. Mayor, getting in touch with you. Thank you, Mayor Rawlings Blake. 410-319-8888. McDonald, line one, you're on the air.
Yes, Mayor, I heard you say something about you trying to get more jobs for the people here in America. How? By building these here buildings down in Canton for the illegal immigrants, and then the illegal immigrants is building the building. We ain't getting no job. We ain't getting no job. You want to let no one get no job except the illegal immigrants, and then you want to bring some more illegal immigrants over here. My God, you can't even walk down the street without bumping into about 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 of them.
You don't know they're all undocumented. But anyway, Mayor.
Well, I think it's a little hard to answer that question based on his premise. I mean, I'm not 100% sure who he's calling illegal. And who this us is that he's talking about that I'm not providing jobs for. I think that it's important to have a diverse economy. I also think that I've already answered that question when I talked about the fact that we're focused on making sure that more of the dollars that Baltimore City spends goes to local companies that are hiring Baltimore City residents. I have a very strong track record of employing Baltimoreans. We exceeded our hiring goals at the casino. We're exceeding the goals at Harbor Point. We continue to look for opportunities to strengthen local businesses because not only are they the backbone of our economy, but they're putting Baltimoreans to work, and I'll continue to do that.
Do we have time? We have one more question. Yes, we do. Let me go to the phones here, and we'll go to somebody to see where we got here, who's been waiting a while. Let's go to line two. Is it Vernon? Overton, line two.
Everton?
Yeah, Everton. I'm sorry, Everton. You're on the air.
Yes. Oh, great. I have a question for the mayor. I guess my situation is personal, although it involves everyone within the city and in the communities. My first issue is how can people actually build relations with the police, but as long as the police can hide their crimes or their involvement of wrongdoings with the citizens, then it's okay. If you have pictures or you have camera videos, then it seems like then they can be accountable or it's some issue. Let me say to my situation. I've been targeted by a community that I own two homes right across the street from each other. I guess the community thought I had money, and they started following me around. I called the 911 many different times. They started shooting at me. I had pictures of the tag. And you know what the police said? Police said, I forgot the tag. They done nothing about the situation. They shoved it on the rug. Okay, my next question is, these two homes, one I've owned one for 10 years. I had a blowhorn in front of City Hall calling out the mayor. Asking her what can she do in my situation when the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is manipulating the neighborhood so I can't sell my home. When they have sold three homes next to mine, one home three times next to mine to try to make me not sell my home for $30,000, $40,000 when the home was originally bought in 2000, in 2005 for $106,000.
Okay. So what's the question for the mayor?
Uh, what can she do for the citizens of Baltimore when you know things like that is going on, when the manipulation of law enforcement, and they do nothing about it?
So one of the first, thank you for the question. Please don't hang up. If the producer can get your information, I can certainly follow up. I think there's between the Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, contacting you, and then we can also look into the housing issue to make sure that both of those things are addressed. With respect to the issue about cameras, I'm very pleased that we started the body camera pilot program today. I think 150 officers across the city are going to be piloting the three different vendors that made it through the process, so we can see which cameras will be best to meet the needs of Baltimore City and the police officers that are using them. I believe in the type of transparency that the cameras will provide. That's why I was so determined to make sure that we get it right for the citizens of Baltimore. I've also been interested in trying to level the playing field. The issue that he mentioned about feeling like the officers get away with things that the general public doesn't. And that's why I was one of a less than a handful of individual elected officials, and certainly the highest ranking elected official, that was fighting in Annapolis during the session for reform to the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. It was a pretty lonely fight down there. I think now, after the tragic death of Freddie Gray, everybody's on board with fighting, all the elected officials. They want to have task force and work groups and all those things. It would have been helpful to just been, fighting with me in January and February and March for these law enforcement reforms. We could have shown the public that progress was coming. So I'm hopeful that more electeds will be working alongside me to reform the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights in this legislative session, so we can level the playing field and work to rebuild the trust between the community and the police.
Mayor Steph Rawlings-Blake, I appreciate you taking the time again today. Look forward to talking to you next month. Hopefully you can love to have you come in one day and spend a little bit more time with us. It's always great to talk to you, though.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Take care. We're going to take a brief break, and on our way back from break, we're going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. When we come back from break, we'll continue this conversation about our city, a local news roundtable. Stay with us, and stay on the line. We'll get you in here.